Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking about the Bears have a kicker. The Bears have a kicker. The Bears have a kicker. Just in case you didn't hear me the first three times, the Bears have a kicker. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is right around the corner. So head on over to icehogs.com, get a hat, shirt, jersey, season tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Oh my goodness, Alex. That game had me an emotional train wreck.
What did we just watch? The game that ended, what, a half hour ago? What did we just watch? I can't explain it, but it was a big whirlwind of stupid. And the one thing that I am really glad to say about winning this game is that, to me, I don't know about you, but to me, it felt like this game erased that demon that was looming over them in Denver. Because I think if you look back at all the bad Bears losses the past decade, one of those losses that really stands out was that Tim Tebow game in 2011. This felt like they avenged that game. It's stupid, ugly, bad, but the fact that they pulled out a win, it feels kind of good remembering the last time you were at that
this
stadium.
Game just was not a pretty game on any level. Both offenses were dog shit tacos. The Denver offense probably has a decent number of yards on the stat sheet, but it was all on swings that ended up getting good yardage and some broken plays that were miracles. Like the one where Joe Flacco got hit and the ball went straight up and they caught it for a first down. There was just it, but it was not pretty on Denver's side, and the Bears just couldn't pass. So it was absolute debacle. The play calling on offense on both sides, it was boring and uninspired on the Broncos side, and it was frankly pretty bad on the Bears side. Mm-hmm. And then the officiating was horseshit, which is dog shit but bigger. It was terrible.
Yeah,
and you know what? The Bears really benefited at the end of the game by a roughing the passer call. And you know what? That was not a roughing the passer, but it sort of negated because we had another one on the Bears side where they called a roughing the passer that wasn't a roughing the passer. And then we also had the Leonard Floyd that was a personal foul for making a tackle. It was awful. This was the worst officiating I have seen from a non-replacement ref in a long time.
Yeah, it was definitely ugly. I wonder if the weed was getting to their heads or whatnot around the stadium. But
boy, you've been smoking the tweeds.
Secondhand high refs. Well, what are you going to do? You're in Denver. What do you expect? You're up high and you're high, so you can't really win there. But yeah, you had a lot of questionable calls on both sides. The thing about this game for me, I'm going to start. Let's just get with the defense. I mean, the defense was good, but you had the issue that you've had in years past. I mean, it was really evident in like the John Fox era, because frankly, the offense today was like a John Fox offense. You had the defense smother the opponent, but you saw them get tired. you saw them get really tired. And how do you like Buster Screen going crazy towards the end of the game? The other problem I had was, while they played well, I mean, you look at it, you gave up, you know, less than three touchdowns. You know, that's playing well. You put pressure on Flacco. That's good. But boy, the soft coverage from the secondary was really driving me crazy. And that's how they got all their yardage. It was either, you know, they ran the ball or they just had few yard dump passes or slant routes that would turn into something more than it should have been. Especially towards the end of the game, you saw a lot of missed tackles. And that's what led to that go-ahead touchdown drive.
Yeah, I mean, I did see some plays where there was slippage from the defensive back, and I don't know if footing had anything to do with it. I'm not sure, or if it was they were planning to, you know, make sure that nobody got beat over the top, so they were giving them some cushion. I don't know. I have to go back and watch some of it. But if the plan was they were going to use the safeties to blitz more, so guys didn't want to get beat by pressing. But I can live with some of the softer coverages early on when, excuse me, when they were getting more pass rush. By the end of the game, the defensive line was gassed. And it didn't help at all that Bilal Nichols left the game with a hand injury and did not return. So you had a one less guy rotating in on the defensive line. Also, it would have been a lot easier and more palatable if they would have decided of, you know what, we've had enough of this dump off pass that's getting 6, 7, 8, 9 yards. Let's put Roquan Smith on the back if he swings out and take that away. That would have been nice, but you know, there's definitely things that could get cleaned up. But anytime you go on the road and hold your opponent to 14 points on with only one touchdown, you have to take that as a victory, and you should be winning those games. And luckily for the Bears, they pulled this one out. And it was a rabbit out of the hat.
It really was. Now, the offense is what I really want to talk about. And, you know, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of negative in a game the Bears won. But you got to be worried about a number of things. Look, let's just talk about the elephant in the room. That's our quarterback. It was pretty clear that Matt Nagy did not trust Mitch Trubisky in that fourth quarter. I mean, you saw that drive where they had the Fuller interception, which was a fantastic play by Kyle Fuller. Absolutely fantastic. He gets that. You get a first down, and you're like, okay, now you just need maybe one or two more, and you put the game on ice. Heck, even if you would have gotten one more, you would have run out the clock, because Fangio was using his timeouts pretty early. I was kind of surprised by that, to be honest. You could have at least milked the clock more and pinned him deep. But you saw the last two plays that Trubisky made. I mean, they were both just dump passes towards the side. You were trying to get a first down. You weren't even throwing like a quality screen pass. You were just dumping it off. And they went nowhere. I mean, you would think that if a head coach would trust his quarterback more, if you're going to have your quarterback throw, you'd want him throwing downfield, yes, to get the first down?
Yeah, or the middle of the field.
Or the middle of the field, yeah. I mean, forward. My whole point is throw forward.
Here's the thing. Mitch, on all of his deep passes this year, has been abysmal. Abysmal on his deep passes. They weren't that good last year, and they've gotten worse so far. I know it's a small sample size, two games, but it is abysmal. And he has to throw underneath. Not necessarily dump passes, but he has to go under 20-yard passes. And the issue is they have him just standing in the pocket. He is a much better passer when he is either stepping up or rolling out. And there were very few rollouts or step-ups. His best throw of the day was the last throw he made before they called the timeout with 1 second left. And that's he stepped up out of the pocket and he made one read and threw. That's when he is at his best.
And look, and I don't want to take that away from him, but can I also just add that he was wide open. Wide open.
But that's what extending the play does.
Yes, look, yes, you're right.
That's how, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, the guys get wide open because he extends the play.
That's why he's so good.
Yeah, and he knows where his guys are going to be. Mitch needs to use his feet more. Both of these games have been two of his worst games in the Matt Nagy era, and they have been games where he stood in the pocket like a statue.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to be. I don't want him to be a running quarterback. I don't want to mince words. I do not want him to be a running quarterback, but I want him to use his feet as a weapon. Make the other team take that away from you. Is run a few times, whether by design or if you see the play start breaking down, start to run. And I'm fine if you start to run, you pull up right before the line of scrimmage and you make a nice throw, like what happened today. I'm perfectly fine with that. That's called getting better, but you've got to use your feet as a weapon. You have to. That's when he is at his best, is using his feet as a weapon. Make them defend that. If he stands in the pocket, that is not when he's at his best. He's not Peyton Manning. He's not Tom Brady. Use your legs to make yourself better.
Yeah, I think you said it very well. You said it very well.
I don't know what he is long term. I don't know. Is he the answer at quarterback? Last year, I thought he would be. He's showing regression this year in two games. Granted, I think jumped a little bit of a conclusion after the last week's game because Green Bay's defense looks legit.
Yeah.
They made the Vikings, other than a couple of big runs, they made that passing game look like doo-doo. And so it's...
To be fair, so is Kirk Cousins. But Kirk Cousins they are is
doo-doo,
good.
But they made him... I think late in the game, his passer rating was like 28.
Well, did you see that god-awful throw he made on first and goal?
I didn't. I saw bits and pieces of the game. I was in and out. I went to the Blackhawks training camp festival, so...
Awesome.
I got my Patrick Kane bobblehead. From when he scored the game-winning goal in the 2010 Stanley Cup Finals, where he's pointing the finger up and down, and it looks like he's doing the crane kick.
And then looking like he's getting chased by a swarm of bees.
Bees in lava!
Bees! Hey, before we go back to the Bears, I gotta ask, because I've seen pictures of it, and it looks, wow. That new board at the United Center.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
That thing looks huge.
Giant, but it's real nice. It's not it's really big, but it's not like obnoxiously big. Because when I first came in, I was like, something's different. And I'd forgotten all about that they had put it in. I was like, something's different. Mm-hmm. And then my friend was like, check out the new scoreboard. I was like, the new scoreboard. So like I noticed it, but it wasn't so crazy. But it's definitely way nicer.
Looks nice and modern because the old board was pretty like 1999.
Yeah, there are Texas high schools that have better boards than the old one, the United Center had. That was nice. We can recap that the Blackhawks a little bit quickly later, but
sure.
Yeah, Mitch Trubisky. I just don't know what we have. And still, Matt Nagy's play calling is not doing him any favors. Get him. I understand Matt Nagy wants to, after last week, establish the run. It was the right thing to do, but the way they started off that game, you are not a power run team. Stop trying to be one. Your offensive line didn't play together all preseason. They didn't look good last week. Give them time before you start pounding it up this middle. Is do some misdirection. Get their guys running. Make that defensive line tired so at the end of the game you can break off big runs. That's what you did on the drive where you scored a touchdown. But instead, you came out and you ran a John Fox type offense. You pounded it twice and then tried to make a pass, and it just didn't go well. Is come out, get Mitch in some easy throws, get him comfortable, then start establishing the run. I don't know why he's struggling with that. He's outthinking himself.
Well, look, if there was one point of the game where I was really happy with Matt Nagy, it was that touchdown drive, because he was using the run game to its strength. We've said this over and over. This is not a ground and pound team. It's not. It's just not. You have Montgomery and Cohen and Mike Davis. I don't know why they're running with him on first down, but what they did it so well. They used them. They were running towards the outside, getting their blocks, and Montgomery was not pounding the ball forward, but relying on bouncing off tacklers coming in on him. You saw what happened. They went down the field. They eventually got in. I was getting a little annoyed with the play calling at first and goal. I thought it was just the same thing over and over for the most part, but you saw the way they went downfield, and you used the speed of Cordell Patterson correctly, not trying to pound him up the middle. You did exactly what you're supposed to do. I mean, that was the one point in the game where I'm like, okay, Nagy's calling a good game right here. Can we see it continue?
Right. So I didn't like the play calling. Mitch's quarterbacking left a lot of things to be desired. He had that wide open pass to Taylor Gabriel and just sailed it over his head.
Oh, that was bad. That was bad.
That's just bad football. You can't.
I mean,
that's
the difference between a touchdown and a field goal, and in a close game, that makes a big difference.
There was the deep pass to a wide open Tariq Cohen, and that granted the defensive back made a great play, but if Mitch puts a little, like, you know, another 2 feet of air on that, that's a touchdown.
Yeah,
and you know, on deep passes, he's not even close on most of them. He's just airing it out and no touch on it, and it's just sailing 10 feet too far down the field. I don't know what to say. It's, you know, hopefully having a win under your belt, you can come out next week and say, all right, you know, we got a win under our belt. Let's, you know, we've got that weight off our shoulders. Let's play better football. Mitch needs to be better, not just for himself, but for the Bears organization, because if he sucks, it is really hard to replace a quarterback in the NFL. And it's real tough if he sucks, because you wasted it.
You can win a Super Bowl with that defense with an okay quarterback, but not sucks.
Yeah, he's got to be a lot better. He's got to be a lot better. And the crazy part is if you watch the end of that Eagles game, he came out and played really well. I think he's better when he's just not thinking about it and going out there and there's some urgency. Just go out there. This is what we need to do. And maybe you need to start playing with more urgency in the beginning of games, in the first quarter. Come out with urgency. Hey, we need to set the tone. We got ball first. Let's go score a touchdown. We need this. And coach like it's late in the fourth quarter and you need a touchdown. The Bears need to coach like that, and Mitch Trubisky needs to play like that. The way that they marched down the field end of this game, that was impressive. Sure, you got a penalty that helped you along, but you know, to be fair, the other team got two big penalties that helped them score. So it's just sort of a wash. But you know, you came down, you drove down the field, you got a big catch and run, or a big running. Sorry, a big run by Mitch Trubisky out of the pocket to extend the play, and then a nice throw down the field gave his receiver, they've got good receivers, give them a chance to get open, extend the play with your legs, march down the field. That's how you're going to start scoring points. I really do think the Bears have the tools to be a good offense. It's all on the play calling and Mitch playing better. And I think both of those things are, you know, in the dirt right now. And
I'd also like to add the O-line playing a little better.
The O-line did not play that well. They pass protected all right. I mean, when you've got, I mean, did you hear Von Miller's name at all? No.
No, you didn't.
And you heard Bradley Chubb because he had one good play and then the roughing call. So you have two elite edge rushers on that team and they didn't do anything. The one guy was Derek Wolf. Early in the game was blowing things up in the middle of the line. But at the end of the game, they wore him out. They started using some misdirections to get him moved off the line, to move laterally. They used some stretch plays and they got him running and you were more successful. So that's what the Bears need to do. They can't line up with David Montgomery and just pound it up the middle. He's not Todd Gurley. That's not the Bears' identity right now. So you need to, you know, they can run the ball. And I think they also need to pull a page out of the New England Patriots playbook. Also use the short passing game as part of their running game. And I think that's going to be an important part too. So yeah, the Bears need to clean up that play calling and then they need Mitch to step up and use his legs to keep plays alive and really work to give the opportunity for those talented wide receivers to get open and make plays.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And just going back to the O-line for a second, I definitely agree it was better than last week and pass protection was okay. We saw a similar problem last year where it just did not do as well on the ground. We don't see them opening up those holes. Now, again, they're not a ground and pound team, so you're going to have to adjust some things a little bit. I am happy to say that I thought the O-line got better as the game went on. I mean, would you passing wise, at least, would you agree with that?
Yeah. The passing wise, definitely, because early in the game, you saw some of the pockets collapse.
Yeah.
At the end, he had much cleaner pocket.
You just want it more consistent.
Yeah. And you needed to be able to run the ball, create, you know, holes in there, because you've got a running back that has the ability to cut back if you give him an opening, and just didn't have a lot of openings.
One last thing I wanted to say about Mitch Trubisky. If there was a moment that drove me crazy in this game, other than the missed throw to Taylor Gabriel, it might have been the second quarter, but he was scrambling and he tried to float it. I can't remember who it was to, but there were like three defenders all around him and it easily could have been picked. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that was a bad play.
I can't remember.
It was on the screen pass. I don't remember, but it was the screen pass. So it was probably Montgomery or Cohen. Yeah, that was not the right decision. Just throw the ball away, roll out, throw the ball away. And it's, you know, you gotta be smarter about those plays and, you know, they've got to execute those plays better. Is the, you know, other teams are predicting what the Bears are doing because they don't have a vertical game. You know, if they can actually be better with their play calling and utilize some of their weapons better and then get Mitch rolling out or scrambling a little bit to, you know, that's when you're going to see the defensive plays break down. And the longer a play goes, the better the odds the offense has of succeeding. And it's really hard to cover an NFL wide receiver for more than a couple of seconds. So if you extend the play, odds are, especially when you've got Taylor Gabriel, Allen Robinson, and whoever else they have in wide receiver, they've got a good wide receiver core, is the odds of one of those guys getting open is pretty darn good. You've got to be able to identify who got open and hit them. And that's part of what makes Aaron Rodgers so good, is when the play breaks down, those wide receivers, they know where to go, and he knows where to look for them, and he just throws it there, and he doesn't miss his target very infrequently. So he just hits those guys, and then broken plays turn into big gains for the Green Bay Packers.
I have another question I wanted to ask you. Is Anthony Miller dead?
No, but when your quarterback only throws for 120 yards in a game, what do you expect out of him?
Well, I mean,
he got targeted one time.
Right.
Allen Robinson was targeted 7 times. Broniker was targeted 3. The tight ends were targeted 9 times. Nine times by tight ends. So 3 Shaheens, 3 Bronikers, 3 Burtons, then 7 for Robinson, 2 for Taylor Gabriel, 5 for Cohen, 3 for Montgomery, and 1 for Miller. So wide receivers got a total of 10 targets. 10 targets for wide receivers, 9 for tight ends, and 8 for running backs.
Yeah, one other thing I wanted to mention there was, boy, even though he was back and I was happy, Trey Burton did not have a good game today.
He just didn't look healthy. I don't think he's 100% yet.
He looked slow. He looked very sluggish.
And I think you actually had a decent game from Adam Shaheen.
Yeah, you did. He had that one play where he barreled over a guy and was able to get for a first down. I mean, I can't really say statistically if that was his... it probably wasn't his best game statistically in terms of numbers being put up, but in terms of some of the plays he made, yeah, I got to give it to him.
Yeah, no, I thought he had a nice game. You know, nothing major, nothing groundbreaking, but for a guy that you didn't think you'd be able to count on at all, I thought he came and had a nice game.
He made the catches he was supposed to make. He was able to fight for a first down. He didn't really make any huge noticeable mistakes that cost you.
It's not that surprising that you said had so many targets to tight ends, because you played a lot of 2 tight end sets in that offense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think part of that was for pass protection. And I think part of it was, creating some mismatches to, in shorter passes, for Mitch, and it didn't necessarily work for, creating passes for Mitch, but you did win the game.
Yeah.
I think my biggest disappointment, though, and it's been for both games so far, where we saw the Bears do their best was the first drive or two to start the game, and coming out of halftime, that's we saw good plays from them, because those were scripted plays. And so the Bears had worked on those. They knew what they were running and they executed well. And, you have not had success doing that this year. And today, actually, the coming out of the halftime, that opening drive of the second half was just hot garbage. It was a bad series, bad play calling. And I don't know what's going on, if they're just not mentally all on the same page, but they just don't seem prepared on offense to play football.
No. Can you blame that preseason, the lack of playing? I don't know.
Maybe, but you know what? Is you didn't play in last preseason either, and you know your offense clicked much better. So I don't know if they introduced too much of the playbook and guys, you know, they're, is it better to be really prepared for less plays or mediocre prepared for more plays?
That's a
question I don't have the answer to. Is that part of the reason? Is that they, Matt Nagy opened the playbook up too big? And, you know, not just the quarterback, the whole offense is struggling to be able to put that all together. And they talked about that they shrunk the playbook a little bit this week, but still, it just did not look crisp. I think they really need, Matt Nagy's got to not outcoach himself. He's got to, you know, he's starting to pull Trestman where he just comes out there and you know, he knows football in his head, but then translating it out there, I think he's just trying to outsmart himself. And I think he needs to stop being cute and move the football and see the things that are working at the end of plays, being able to make those big drives at the end of plays. Look what you did at the end of the Philadelphia game. Look at the end you did at the end of this game. Do those types of things. Move those chains.
I think part of it, I still think part of it is he doesn't fully trust his quarterback right now.
You know what, though?
So he's kind of at that crossroads.
I agree. That's probably a big part of it. But you know what? Is if your quarterback can't play, you can't mask that forever. You've got to go out there.
No.
And you look at... teams, good teams, well-coached teams, and their quarterback goes down and they're still able to play winning football. Why? Because they just go, you know what? We trust our quarterback. We're not going to, you know, neuter him. We're not going to baby him. We're playing him. And it's on his shoulders to win or lose. And, you know, the Eagles went and they won a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback. When Tom Brady broke his leg and was out like the whole season. Matt Castle made a lot of money as a terrible quarterback because he played well under Bill Belichick. And you know what is you've got to trust your quarterback. And if he ends up not being able to be the guy that you expect him to be, you know what? That's on him. That is on him. And then you bench him. If he can't do the job, you bench him and you put in the backup. And, you know, I think Mitch is more talented than Chase Daniel. But you know what? If Chase Daniel knows the offense better and is more confident in it, then, you know, he should be the one playing in it. Take the training wheels off. Put it on Mitch's shoulders. Because at the end of this season, you've got to make the decision about whether or not you pick up his fifth-year option.
Right.
You pick that up after – you make that decision after his third season. This is the third season, so you need to pick up that fifth-year option. And for him, it's going to be something ridiculous, like almost $20 million. So it's not an easy decision. So you better make sure you're making an educated one. Put that on his shoulders, let him win the game. We've seen good things at the end of games when you put him in position. So I think you need to let him put the big boy pants on and take the training wheels off. And if you lose because he can't handle the pressure at the end of the games, you know, when you're doing this, then guess what? He made his own decision on what his future is with the Bears.
Yeah, he's got a lot to prove still. I mean, the way you start this season, you better show that you're going to be the guy or else they're going to have to move on. I mean, it's that simple. It really is. It makes me more nervous by the game for him. And it stinks because you do see potential when you look at his skill set. He's very athletic. He's got good arm strength. He's shown that he can throw the ball on the move. That's probably, honestly, I prefer watching him throw when he's running than when he's not. When he gets the ball and stands in the pocket, every time he throws, I get nervous it's going to get picked off. And I can't be the only one, right?
No, I mean, it's not Jay Cutler level, but it's still not good.
Right. And we need
to know if he can play. We need to know if he can play. Is take those training wheels off. Put him out there. Is put the onus on him. Let him go out there and lead this team. Because you know what? If he starts balling out, then you know what? This team is, the sky is the limit for this team if he balls out. Mm-hmm. If he goes out there and he throws for 350 yards and three touchdowns and no interceptions, this team is going to roll.
Next week, you have a Redskins team that's not very good. Then you have the Vikings. Then you have the Raiders. So two of your next three games are ones you feel you should win pretty confidently. I mean, you want to go out and beat the Vikings. You kind of have to go out and beat the Vikings. It's going to be a close race in the NFC North. You got to take your division games. But you have an opportunity to kind of let him do more, at least try to let him do more. All I'm going to say about this game against the Redskins coming up, don't coach scared. This is not a game to coach scared in. Let him try to sling.
Right.
Build the confidence now before you get to the meat of the season when you have the Chargers, Philadelphia, the Rams, the Cowboys, Green Bay, the Chiefs. Let him build some confidence before you get there, because that's going to be really important.
Let's talk, though, is we have a kicker.
Yes, I really did want to talk about that.
We were the laughingstock of the NFL for all of training camp and everything because of the kicker situation after last year and the fact that the debacle that was the kicker competition. And then you had all these quote experts that were like, Cody Parkey is still better than anybody the Bears brought in. And guess what? Eddie Pinero won the competition. They didn't trade a fifth round pick to the guy for Kari Vedvik, who's stinking the joint up. Eddie Pinero won that competition, and he has been good. And today kicked two 50-plus yard field goals to win this game.
That game-winning kick was a thing of beauty. It was going to be good the whole way. It was right on target. It had plenty of distance. The second it was going right for the uprights, I knew it was good. And I can't say for one second that I could say the same for when I watched a Cody Parkey kick. It seemed like even the ones that were good would tail off to the left or the right or whatever. That was drilled. And I'll tell you one thing. That kid's got a strong leg, a very strong leg.
He's got a strong leg, and he's got a personality on him. Mm-hmm. I like him, and I was a little down on him, and he proved me wrong. And I know it's early on, and you know things could go awry, but I don't think so because that kid has confidence in himself. He's got a strong leg. I think we found our long-term kicker.
So since Robbie Gould left Chicago, we've had Connor Barth, we've had Cairo, Mike Nugent, and Cody Parkey. I mean, a few of those guys were not long-term solutions. Like Mike Nugent was literally just a guy to fill in, and you know he did okay in meaningless games. I think Cairo played in one game, and then he got hurt. But you thought Barth and Parkey were going to be your long-term answers, and they weren't. Now, again, it's only two games in, but from what we've seen in the preseason, and what we've seen in these first two games. You are seeing consistency. Like I said, the leg is strong, and he's hitting these kicks. I mean, you look at all the field goals he's made, not a big sample size, but he's drilling them. And even though it was in a dome in preseason, you saw him nail a 58-yarder. I mean, that right there showed what the raw kid, the raw abilities the kid has. Now, obviously,
they said he was kicking 60-plus yard field goals in before the game.
Yeah. And, you know, you could say, oh, it was in Denver, thin air. It's like, well, you still got to kick, and it's still got to be accurate. Do you think Cody Parkey would have made that kick last year? No.
They wouldn't have kicked that. They would have gone for it.
And you probably don't make it if you do.
That's the thing of beauty is you look at it and you go, all right, we can attempt these long kicks now. We can attempt these.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to give you a better winning percentage because you're like, okay, if you're going for a 45-yard Hail Mary, your odds are probably a lot lower than if you're going for a 55-yard field goal, when you've got a strong leg kicker. So it actually opens up the possibilities to do more things and have the opportunity to win games late. It also, your offense does not have to get you as close. I mean, with Cody Parkey, you were like, we've got to get to the 20-yard line.
Yeah.
20-yard line.
Because you got to remember, it's about what? 17 additional yards to where you are? 18.
18. Yeah. So it's 10 yards because where the line of scrimmage is goes to the end line, the goal line. And then it's 10 yards. The goal post is 10 yards back. And then you set up 8 yards back from the line of scrimmage. So it's 18 yards. So to 20 yard line, that's a 38 yard kick. And that's the close or the farthest you feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We're looking at with today, they put that line at like almost the 40 yard line. That's mm-hmm. 20 yards that you have to work with, like 20 extra yards that you don't have to get.
Go watch the kick again. When Pinheiro is in his starting position, he is literally in the mouth of the Bronco at center field, right on the 50-yard line, center field. I don't know why I called it that. At the 50-yard line, it literally looks like the Bronco threw him up and he kicks the field goal. I mean, if you look, go and look at the game footage of when he kicks to give you a good idea of how far it was. When Pinheiro was in his starting position, ready to go up and kick, he was literally in the mouth of the Bronco logo. It looks like the Bronco threw up Eddie Pinheiro and then he made the kick. That just gives you an idea of how far it was. I mean, he was standing. His starting position was about the 45-yard line, which is where the nose of the logo is. And then you account for those extra yards of the end zone. That's far.
Absolutely. And it feels so good to finally have a kicker that can kick a long field goal and just crush the hopes and dreams of the opponent and their fans. I'm so sick of it. Against our team, they're going to kick a 73-yard field goal to win the game. And you're like, oh, he's not going to hit this. Oh, that's up. It is perfectly up down the uprights. Yep. No question about that one. That one had 10 extra yards it could have gone.
Yeah. Well, look back since 2015. You had the Robbie Gould miss against the 49ers. Then you had the Connor Barth miss against the Lions where it wasn't even close. And Tom Brenneman said, holy Moses, when it went like 50 feet wide. Then you had last year's playoff game. And then last year, too, you remember in overtime against the Dolphins, Parkey, it was about the same distance. I think it was a 54-yard field goal attempt in Miami.
Roughly.
And he wasn't close. So you have seen field goals, or lack thereof, break your heart for a number of years. And now it feels like it's on the other foot again. I mean, shoot. It's going to be hard until they actually do it to beat the Robbie Gould game-winning field goal against the Seahawks in the playoffs. But this comes close to being one of the most feel-good field goals that we've seen, at least in the past decade, because 2006 was a long time ago. Robbie Gould made a few other game-winning kicks, sure. But when Robbie Gould was in his prime, the kicking was never an issue. It was never a problem. The kicking was such a circus last year and in the offseason. You lost a playoff game because a kick hit the uprights and did not go in. So now it feels like a much bigger monkey off the back where, you know, back in Robbie Gould's prime, you just expected him to make it.
Yeah, and it's nice because, I mean, I'm not going to compare the two because Robbie Gould is an all-time great kicker and Eddie Pinheiro hasn't even kicked a full season. But Eddie Pinheiro's got a stronger leg. And that's not even questionable. So hopefully he can, continue his growth and we see that he develops into an all-time great Bear.
And literally, as we're talking, Matt Bryant just absolutely shanked a kick for the Falcons.
Yeah, I'm watching that too. Just did this must have gotten blocked. This must have.
I don't think it did. I don't look at the replay. I don't think it did.
Nope. He just
shanked it.
Oof. Eddie Pinheiro's like, I would have got that. I'd have got that from 10 yards back.
Thanks for not listening to us, Bears.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So, yeah, just to summarize the end of that game, it was elation, then just agony, then elation, and then agony, and then elation. Because, you know, it was agonizing watching them march down the field, and you're like, they're about to score a touchdown. And you're like, I can't believe this. And then they throw an interception to, you know, great play by Kyle Fuller. The interception.
Excellent play.
And you're like, awesome. All right, this should seal it. And then the Bears go super conservative and bad play calling, look like crap. And you're like, crap. All right, they're giving them another chance. But you know what? This offense is anemic. They're not going to dink and dunk this all the way down the field. And they dink and dunk it all the way down the field. And they got some questionable calls on their side. And you're like, you know what? They're still going to stop them. And they get the touchdown, which was, I'm not going to lie, that was a beautiful throw and catch. And you're like, okay, they're going for two. You're like, okay, now this is scary. They're going to win by 1 point, aren't they? And then they get the delay of game. And I was like, yeah, actually kind of crap because I like the chances of them missing the 2 point conversion better than the 1 point conversion.
Right. I agree.
And they missed the extra point. I'm like, oh my God, the Bears are going to win. The Bears are going to win. And they're like offsides. And then you're just back down again. And then they go back for the 2 point conversion and they get it. And I'm just devastated. Just devastated.
Yep. I tweeted, I hate the Bears.
Yeah, I remember the tweet. I was devastated. And they march on the field and they make the field goal and, you know, snatch victory or from the jaws of defeat. And, you know, now I don't have to hear about, oh, Vic Fangio knows this Bears defense and offense better than they should be able to handle them. And Vic Fangio, you know what? Bears.
Yeah. That Pagano guy doesn't know how to play defense in big times towards the end of the game.
That Vic Fangio, he was going with the Bears, but you know, he left the Bears and now he's not good. He hasn't won a game yet.
I don't know why they kept that Nagy bum anyways.
They should have hired Mike Ditka.
He wouldn't have put up with that.
Mike Ditka would have gone on the field and made the tackle himself. Yeah, these bums don't know what they're doing out there. I would have made that tackle. Listen, old man, you're 400 years old. You wouldn't have done nothing. Yeah, when I was 21, I would have made that tackle because I was all area in Division VI football.
I was a star.
I was a star in, you know, the Wabanzi Valley area. And my team afterwards, we would go for Sundays and sausage pizza. Let's see. What else? Leonard Floyd looks like a legit player.
Yeah, he had a great game. I mean, outside of the dropped pick, he had a fantastic game. He was all over the place.
And then I want to talk about my favorite play of the game that wasn't a game-winning field goal. It's when Cordarrelle Patterson ran down and tackled that guy by his helmet.
Oh, yeah.
Just grabbed that guy by his helmet. And they were like, the announcers were like, that was a almost, I don't know. He just grabbed him by the sides of his ear holes of his helmet and threw him down. Cordarrelle Patterson he's a big man. He's huge. And did you see the next gen stat of how fast he was running on that one run play he had?
I didn't see the stat. I must have missed it.
He was like 24 miles an hour.
Jeez. That was my favorite play of the game, was that run he had.
I think they said he had the top, like his highest peak speed anybody's had in the NFL this season so far in a play.
Yeah, that's pretty legit. I mean, he was flying down the sides.
But when he went and tackled that guy by his head, I was like, love it. And I'm looking, and I'm like, before I get too excited, I'm looking, where's the flag? Where's their flag? No flag. All right. And based on some of the calls that the ref made, I'm so surprised that they didn't call that something or other.
Oh, I was waiting. I was waiting for the flag.
Yeah. I mean, the Eddie Goldman one was ridiculous. All the Leonard Floyd one was ridiculous. The Bradley Chubb one was ridiculous. So that one was beneficial to the Bears, but that was ridiculous as well. All three of them.
Of course.
They were all legit football players. And it's funny because I don't know if you saw the highlight from the Steelers Seahawks game, but Westbrook, Russell Wilson got demolished after a play, and they didn't call anything that one. And I'm like, man, they wouldn't have had enough flags to throw in this game with these officials.
Yeah, I think the flags are nice and brown from all the grass they landed on today.
So yeah, the Bears got their victory, and I really think that was important because they've got an easy, it's never an easy schedule in the NFL, but their early schedule is much easier than the later schedule. You've got it
right. Absolutely.
You know, this is a winnable game. You did win it, even though it was on the road. You've got Redskins next week, which is a very winnable game. The Vikings came back down to earth, and they're looking like the Vikings that you beat last year, where they've got a good defense, but I feel like you can shut down their offense. And then you've got the Raiders and the Saints. It's looking like you're not going to have Drew Brees for that game.
Yeah, that's that could be a pretty big break right there. You're going to be playing Teddy Bridgewater probably.
Yeah, I have a bunch of friends that live in New Orleans that are Saints fans, and they are they're in Panic City right now.
I bet.
And I didn't see the post game press conference, but they said it was doom and gloom.
Well,
so
same with my fantasy football team.
Ooh, you have Brees?
Yep, he got me the win last week, but
and then you get the Chargers, which I think is a winnable game. Eagles is going to be a tough one. Then Lions, Rams, Giants is a winnable one. Lions, Cowboys is a tough one. Packers tough one. Chiefs tough one. So you've got to get these wins whenever you can in the NFL. When you've got a very winnable game, you've got to take advantage because those when you're playing those tough teams, you can't rely on you know, beating them regularly. You've got to take care of the winnable games and then, you know, do 50-50 in these, those, you know, heavyweight bouts.
Yeah, you need every win you could take so far early in the season. I mean, I even said yesterday, like, this is the closest you'll ever see to calling a week two game a must win.
Yeah, because you've got the Packers are undefeated. You don't want to fall too far behind them. The Lions won today. So you just can't fall behind multiple teams in your division. And when you've got the hard part of your schedule coming up, you've got to make sure that you're taking care of business. So yeah, it was as close to a must win in week two as I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people would agree with that.
So, I mean, looking forward to next week, I think you should see a better opportunity for the offense to score some points, because that Redskins defense is not nearly as good as this rebuilt Packers defense or the Denver defense with Vic Fangio in Denver. So you should see the offense be able to open up more.
Absolutely. And that's why I said earlier in the show, you got to let Mitch try to do more. If you're going to try to build confidence in your quarterback and you want both your coach and your quarterback to be confident at the same time, you got to let him do more. You just have to.
Yeah.
You can't win a Super Bowl by coaching scared. You will never win a Super Bowl that way.
Nope. You've got to play to win. It's, you know, you look when the Eagles beat the New England Patriots, and you know, their coaching staff, they came out and they were wearing hammer pants so they could fit their balls inside because they were so big, with how many plays that they went for.
Yeah. I mean, they were completely prepared. They didn't play scared. I mean, they had the Philly special, for goodness sake. Which I think included pounds and pounds of Crisco to put on the poles in Philadelphia.
Grease the poles.
Crisco.
And the one more thing I wanted to talk about is, I don't know if you saw the news during the week, because it was kind of under the radar. James Vaughters was cut by the Bears. He's no longer on the practice squad.
Yeah, I did see that.
I think that's a bummer. I don't know what they don't like about him. I don't know what they don't like about him. I thought he played really well in the time that he got to play. I thought he did a really good job. But he's a free agent now, so he's not playing football on anybody's team.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was kind of a little surprising myself, but oh well.
So should we switch gears real quick and talk Cubs?
Yeah.
I honestly thought they were dead in the water after that 4-game series against the Padres.
Yeah, at least after game three, when you lost on that awful walk-off walk, and then you get shut out 4-0.
Yeah, it was bad. You know, we said you needed to take care of business against these bad teams, and they didn't. They didn't. They even though it's in San Diego, that's really not a home field advantage.
No.
You know, there's so many Cubs fans, and a lot of times it's just fans just go to the game because it's beautiful weather and you're seeing baseball. It's not much of a home field advantage. You should take care of business against that team. They're not that good. And you split a 4-game series. And I know that's kind of usually what happens with 4-game series. You go 2-2, but
it's dire.
It was dire. You needed to take at least 3 of 4. And with the Brewers and the Cardinals, they just won't stop winning. And you're like, damn it. It's just, are we going to get caught from behind by the the Brewers again, and then we get a big break. Literally. Yelich breaks his kneecap. And I don't root for injuries, but I'm just glad that it's, you know, other teams are getting injuries, injury bugs like we are. It's not just us.
Well, I'm overall very happy. Speaking of injuries, I'm overall very happy about this weekend, absolutely crushing the Pirates. But I got to tell you, that Anthony Rizzo injury has me worried as hell, because he might be the most important player on your team. And to not have him would be just a blow beyond belief.
Did you watch the replay at all?
Unfortunately.
Of the injury?
Unfortunately.
It was hard to watch. I don't know how that's not going to be done for the season. I don't know. That looked terrible.
Well, we'll find out with the MRI. That's what I'm worried about, is soft tissue damage. And I mean, sprains too. Those could be tricky. Even if they're just sprains or severely rolled ankle, those could be tough.
I mean, because they did x-ray, so there's no broken bones.
Right.
But that didn't look like broken bones. That looked like torn ligaments.
Right.
And that's what you're going to find out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or probably, I don't know if they'll announce it tomorrow, but probably by Tuesday you'll know.
They said Monday morning the MRI is going to happen.
Yeah, I just don't know if we'll get the results.
But we'll see.
Tuesday morning we'll know what's going on, and it did not look pretty.
One thing's for sure, he's not going to be playing in the series against the Reds.
No, you're not. And, you know, I don't know. Did they announce a time frame for Javi Baez? It's probably not till the playoffs.
If they make the playoffs, it's going to be, we'll see at that point. But rest of the regular season, he's not coming back.
That's tough news. Craig Kimbrel back on the shelf. Tough news.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest, if he's done for the year. If they just shut him down. I know if they get in the playoffs, they need all hands on deck. But if he keeps having setbacks like the way he is, and you know how valuable that arm is, I wouldn't be surprised if they just see him get shut down.
I'm not against that. But I'm just worried. Because this Pirates series was a feel-good series, because they just
absolutely
kidding. Mopped the floor with the Pirates.
47 runs, was it, they scored?
Something like that. It was a lot of runs. And
16 today, 14 yesterday, and was it 17 or 18 the first one? Something like that.
Let's see. It was 16 today, 14 yesterday. So that's 30, and 17 on Friday. So that's 47.
47. Yep.
That's a lot of runs to score in three games.
Yeah. And what's really sad is when Rizzo gets hurt, we were saying, oh, look, Bryant looks fully healthy again, because he had those knee issues, but he looked really good in this series. And then Bryant goes down.
Yeah.
Rizzo goes down.
It's nice, because you're only two games behind the Cardinals now with seven games left against them. And it was a tough one because the Brewers were facing the Cardinals, and the Brewers are hot on your ass. They're only a game behind you. The Cardinals are two a game ahead of you. So you're like, who do you root for? It's if the Cardinals win, you gain a game, you know, you gain a cushion on the Brewers, but if the Brewers win, you gain a game on the Cardinals, but you right. only stay one ahead of the Brewers. I don't know what the right answer is.
The right answer is you just got to keep winning.
Yeah. You've got to,
the only thing you can control.
The Cubs can control their own destiny, because yep. if they keep, they're ahead of the Brewers already. So if they keep winning, then, you know, there's nothing the Brewers can do. And the Cardinals are two games ahead of them, but they have seven games against the Cardinals. So you if you beat the Cardinals, then you move ahead of them. So that's really all in your hands. But the injuries have just so stacked up, and I'm just worried that we're going to over-exaggerate how good this weekend series was because,
the Pirates are a joke.
The Pirates just have given up, number one. Number two, they still beat the crap out of the guy who's been pitching really well for you in Quintana, which was not fun to see. Now you're down Javi Baez, you're down Anthony Rizzo, you're down Craig Kimbrell, you're down Addison Russell, which I don't care.
Because fine.
I saw, was it, which media outlet, they posted a thing like, what do you do with Nico Horner when Addison Russell comes back?
You keep playing him.
Yeah, but you keep playing him and then you catapult Addison Russell as far as the catapult will send him.
And look, I understand that Nico Horner is going to have some rough patches just naturally as a young 22-year-old kid. There's going to be adjustments made. The rate he's hitting isn't going to last. But you look at the kid, young, athletic, confident, has a beautiful swing, so far has tore it up. You got to play the hot hand. And look, there was a double play in this game where when you saw it, it was either a 4-6-3 or a 3-6-3 where it kind of had to go quickly because the Pirates have some good runners. It was a double play where I said, if Addison Russell was fielding that ball at second base, they wouldn't have turned two.
And you know what? Addison Russell has had a lot of opportunities and he's regressed as a hitter.
And as a fielder.
And so why? What? He is who he is at this point. I don't know where else he goes. Just part ways with him. He's not a good person as a person. He's not giving you what you need on the field. So I don't know what the purpose he serves is. Nico Horner makes less money, number one. Better as a person and his playing better baseball. So it's just like all around win.
He's your top prospect right now and he should be treated as such. And look, yeah. If a piece isn't working and a piece is working, you go with the piece that is working. And frankly, I'm optimistic in saying, I think Theo understands that. Honestly,
I hope he does.
I still think Theo bringing back Addison Russell was more to prove a point than actually for the team itself. And I think that backfired big time. I mean, look at Milwaukee. That error he made that ended up being the winning run, saying it was probably a good thing that happened so he could learn from it. Yeah, no, there should be no excuse for that at this point of the game. If Addison Russell wasn't, doing what he was doing off the field and he was a rookie, then you say, okay, the dude has been in the league since 2015 and he has owned up to basically nothing. Every time he's had a shot to redeem himself, he has just crapped the bed in front of the media. You don't deserve many excuses after that.
Agreed. I fully agreed. And I think he was brought back because the front office was worried that if they just let him walk and he came out and did something good with another team, it would look bad on them.
Sure.
And that's, you can't play like that. Is, the fan base does not like him and he's not playing good baseball. And I get that. Your minor league, roster of middle infielders isn't that deep, but you can easily go out and get a utility guy that can fill in for you. That's a much better person for the same amount of money.
You could go out and get a Jose Iglesias for a hell lot cheaper.
Yeah. And, And Nico Horner, they did not want to bring Nico Horner up.
No, he wouldn't have been up if it wasn't for the injury.
Even if it was, well, not just the injuries on the major league roster. They were, did you hear Theo Epstein's like long interview on the radio?
I heard snippets of it, not the whole thing.
Is they talked about there was other guys in the minors that they wanted to bring up. They said there's like a 27-year-old guy that they brought over. I don't remember his name, but they wanted to bring him, but he got injured at the end of the season.
Didn't. Dixon Machado. I think that's who you're thinking of.
Yeah. And they didn't. So they were going to bring him, but then they didn't because of injury. So then they kind of were put into a corner of, well, they got to bring Nico Horner.
Yeah, it was kind of a no choice, and Nico Horner's made the most of it so far.
Right. How many RBIs does he have in his six games?
A lot. He's hit two home runs, hit a couple of doubles.
Yeah, so he's he's playing himself into a job. We're looking what's he sitting at right now? In is brief, and I know this is really brief and in a small sample size, but Nico Horner is batting .379 with slash line of .379, .438, .655 with a 1100 OPS.
You know what? I have the angel and the devil on each of my shoulders. The devil right now has the big thing of Kool-Aid with the wooden spoon going clink, clink, clink with him looking at that slash line. The other guy on my other shoulder is humming a little tune into my ear going, small sample size, small sample size. But, I mean, either way you look at it, you got to give the kid credit. The guy was going to be playing, like, what, some international league ball or something? Some off-season ball?
When you called him and told him he was coming up, he was sitting at home watching the Cubs game with his family on his couch.
Yeah, there you go.
So he was at home in California and got the call. So he wasn't playing baseball. He was just chilling.
I know he was set to go somewhere. I just don't remember where. But yeah, you're right. He wasn't playing at the time. But to go from that to playing in the big leagues, I mean, wow.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a certain guy that we traded for that has been absolutely instrumental in the Cubs being where they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his name rhymes with Nick Bastianos,
mm-hmm.
Who's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. And he's expressed how much he loves playing for the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
But he also has an agent who doesn't give hometown discounts.
And he rhymes with Mott Glorus.
Yes. Where does this come to a head? Your opinion. I know you're not, you don't have a direct line to Castellanos, but where do you see this coming to a head? That the Cubs pay the most money for him, or that he accepts a reasonable offer with the Cubs and stays?
I think if the Cubs do keep him, it's not going to be like incredibly albatross, but it's probably going to be for a decent amount of money for a guy like him. I mean, I think that it's really important to try to bring him back. I mean, he fits this team like a glove. It's not going to come cheap, but I do think it's doable. One of the good things about this offseason is that there is going to be money coming off the books, a lot of money coming off the books for that matter. And that's another point that I wanted to make about this coming season. There was a lot of weirdness coming to this season. You had an off season where the Chicago Cubs said they didn't have any money. They were coming into a season where you had a lame duck manager. They were coming into a season where they just got their division titles stolen from them despite winning 95 games. I mean, there was a lot of weird things going on. As we go into this next offseason, you're either going to re-sign your manager or you're going to find a new one. You're not going to worry about a lame duck manager, and you're going to have money to work with. So I feel like if the Cubs want to bring back Nicholas Castellanos, it's going to be possible. I think they can do it.
I'm going to throw a number out there, and you tell me if this sounds like a reasonable number for Nicholas Castellanos.
Okay.
4-year, $55 million.
I think that's probably a very fair offer. I don't think you're going to get him back if it's anything less than four. I think $50, $55 million is the place to really try to look and start. I mean, if you sign him up for 4 years, it's not like he's old. He's still in his 20s. And if things go bad down the road and Nick Castellanos is still putting up good numbers, you could trade him away for value.
Yeah, because you can always, if his defense, I mean, his defense has been okay with the Cubs.
It hasn't been horrific. It looked horrific in Detroit, but that's because that ballpark is crazy.
So he's looked meh, just like a guy. If it regresses, you could always move him to an American League team where he could play DH.
And look, the guy's on pace to hit like 60 doubles this year. I mean, he hit like his 53rd today. He had a couple doubles today. It's unbelievable what this guy's been doing. I wouldn't expect him to have another 60 double season in the future, but he'd still put up some very solid numbers. You look at his whole career, he's consistently put up good numbers. It's not like he's having this unbelievable season compared to others. Yeah, it's probably his best year so far, but it's not like he's some no-name schmuck that wasn't doing anything all of a sudden having a huge breakout year. He's been a consistently good player for a number of years.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, here's the thing is if you do sign him and you end up deciding whatever, you're going to rebuild or you want to go a different direction or you're not happy with whatever, is you can elevate, artificially elevate his value by choosing which pitchers that he starts against based on his historic numbers. And you can move him to an American League team and and that could increase his trade value.
Right. So I think it's important they do their best to try to bring him back.
Agreed. So we've got three teams we're left to play against this season, and it's coming down to crunch time. You've got one series against the Reds, one series against the Pirates, and then seven against the Cardinals.
The one good thing I can say, at least, is that when we play the Cardinals, the majority of them are going to be at Wrigley Field. Four at Wrigley, three at Busch Stadium. So that's good news. I'm a little worried about this Cincinnati series, though, just apart from the fact that they've been a pain in the ass to us all year. You scored 47 runs against the Pirates. That is not sustainable, and you're going to be going up against Cincinnati's best. That includes Luis Castillo. I think they're facing Sonny Gray again. So you're facing their best guys, and you know you're not going to keep that offense sustained, especially if you don't have Anthony Rizzo. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of frustration coming up over these next three games.
And looking at the wild card standings, so for the division, they're two games behind the Cardinals with 13 left. They're one up, so they're 1.5 behind Washington for the first wild card. So whether or not they would be that one game playoff would be at home or on the road. You're one game ahead of Milwaukee, and then everybody else is starting to fade.
Yeah, you see the Mets fading. You see the Phillies fading.
Arizona's fading.
They never should have been there in the first place. They were overplayed.
No, they shouldn't have. but they were very late.
Oh, yeah,
they
were right on your tail.
So now they're 5.5 right now. So that's almost an insurmountable lead with 13 games left.
With how many teams to leapfrog?
They'd have to leapfrog Philadelphia, the Mets, Milwaukee, and the Cubs.
Yeah. Now, if you looked on paper, I would have said, okay, the biggest threat to me is the Phillies behind you, but I think it's Milwaukee. And again, nothing about Milwaukee on paper really scares me, but they just find these ways to win in September. And not to mention, Milwaukee's schedule in September, like last year, is pretty weak. So they have a good opportunity to make another September miracle run. And going into September, I thought the Brewers were toast. Unfortunately, the Cubs kind of let them back in the race. So, yeah, they're not toast just yet.
Yeah, so Arizona's 5.5 at this point. You can sort of write them off. But beyond them, San Francisco's 9.5. So San Francisco and everybody below are absolutely out, even if they're not mathematically eliminated. But you mathematically eliminated Pittsburgh today. So they're mathematically eliminated, or at least with the series. Philadelphia is now 4.5 behind you. That's a tough one. That's, you know, that's getting to be insurmountable. The Mets are 3.5, and
they're there. They're not, you know, they're not gone.
They could be gone, you know, in by Wednesday, but they could be right back in it by Wednesday. So these next couple games are super important for them. Milwaukee's right there on your ass. So it's clearing up. It's looking a little more comfortable with Yelich being out. That's got to take some wind out of their sails. So hopefully Milwaukee starts coming back down to earth and not winning 90% of their games. And it's really just chasing down the Cardinals.
That Rizzo injury really hurts.
It really does. But you know what? If Horner keeps hitting, Castellanos keeps hitting, and Bryant keeps hitting, they can...
Schwarber,
yeah. You know,
Hayward's getting hot again, so that's nice.
You know, maybe Caratini has been very good offensively. Maybe that means he gets some more at-bats. Playing first base.
Well, he's going to have to. Someone's got to play first base.
I just hope it's not Hap regularly.
Well, I think you're going to see a combination of both.
Yeah, but I like what Caratini has done offensively. So hopefully he gets some more at-bats.
And I mean, if you have Contreras healthy again, then that really helps things.
So, you know, it really sucks the injuries you have, but I mean, it's not insurmountable. But you've got to go out there and win these games.
Yeah, absolutely.
I quickly want to bring up the White Sox. We haven't talked about them really in a couple weeks, but they've just kind of been a dumpster fire these last couple weeks. But there's right now, Tim Anderson is still leading the majors in batting average.
Hey, he hasn't slowed down one bit.
So he's got a .333 batting average, which is ahead of Yelich, ahead of DJ LeMahieu, Marte, Brantley. So it's looking like a good shot that he's going to win the batting title.
And good for him.
Yeah, really.
You know, he's really worked hard this year.
Yeah. You know, very, very good for him. I hope he's a really passionate, likable guy. Like he should, you know, we kind of wrote him off a little bit because he started slow in his career, but he's really starting to find his stride. So hopefully for the White Sox that this is a guy that's going to continue on this and not up being a fluke year.
Yeah, you would hope so. But I think he's got the talent to at least continue to be productive throughout his career. I really do.
And, you know, you also have to talk about, you know, Lucas Giolito more. We really haven't talked about him a lot, but the guy's got he's got a 6 WAR right now. I guess
that's pretty good.
Let's see on FanGraphs. I don't know why Baseball Reference is the first one that pops up when you want stats. what's his current war here? He's a 5.1 F4. And last year he was a 0.1. And the year before he was a 0.3. And the year before that he was a negative 0.6. So yeah, that's incredible.
And that speaks volumes. I'm usually not one to look at F4 for pitchers, but if you have a pitcher that's that high of an F4, that shows how good he is. It really does. It really speaks volumes.
Yeah, I mean, he had a couple tough ones later in the season, and the record isn't spectacular. It's good, but not spectacular.
It's not relevant.
No, no, especially when you're playing on a team that's just playing garbage baseball. But he's 14-9. He's got 176 over 176 innings pitched. He's K's per nine is 11.62. His walks per nine is under three. Let's see what else. ERA 3.41. His FIP is 3.43. The guy is having an incredible year for a really bad team, and that's such good news. Like, you know, you're getting guys on that team that are, they're good dudes, and they're really setting the table for you going forward for the White Sox organization.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the way things are going for the young players right now. The team itself as a whole is not winning, but Lucas Giolito looks good. Tim Anderson looks good. Eloy Jimenez has been hitting well lately the past week or so. He's hit a couple of bombs. That's a really good sign. Yoan Moncada continues to play very, very consistently good baseball. So those are really, really promising signs right there. You know, like I've said, a lot of these players on this team aren't going to be there when you're trying to win a World Series. You're not going to be relying on Daniel Palka and the Wellington Castillos of the world. You're going to be relying on these young players that have shown a lot of promise already. And you have more waiting in like Luis Robert and Madrigal. So just watch the team the rest of the way for these young players, because they've certainly shown they've got a lot of talent.
Yeah, and this team is a team that is not as good as the sum of its parts. So you've got a lot of good individual performances. So you feel like you fill in some of the gaps where there's been poor play with some better players, spend a little money, and you feel like this could be a competitive team next year. I mean, you did have James McCann came back down to earth. He still had a good season, but like his slash line here with not too many games left is 273, 329, 456 with an OPS of 785.
You kind of knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, but that's still for a catcher, still pretty decent numbers.
Oh, yeah, very productive. Very productive.
With 16 home runs and 55 RBIs. Like, that's, you take that. You look at Jose Abreu, had another really good year. The guy had a slash line at 284, 332, 516 with an 850 OPS.
Yeah, very productive.
Tim Anderson, 333, 350. The guy just still doesn't walk. 333 average with a 354 on base percentage. But 862 OPS. Yoan Moncada, 305, 361, 536 with a 900 OPS. Eloy's numbers aren't eye-popping, but you're starting to see him come alive. He's got 27 home runs already.
For a kid who's what, 22, 23? Yeah,
but it is 250, 254, 305, 485.
For a kid that age, yeah, I'm taking that.
And then you just got garbage in Wellington Castillo and Adam Engel and
who are not going to be there in the long run.
No, not at all. And you know, then you have the future of Luis Robert.
He might be the best hitter in baseball when it's all said and done. Like, I'm not even kidding.
He just mashed. Yeah, he finished 2019 with, because I think the minors are done, right?
They are, yeah.
So finished the season 332, 379, 639, 34 home runs.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's really good. And that was a combination of every level. He played single, double, and triple A.
In 1 year, that's impressive.
Yeah, I think he started in, didn't he play rookie ball too? So he went to every level and he crushed it at every level. Like there was no drop off. He crushed it at every single level. It's a shame that they didn't have him on the major league roster. And if he does not start opening game on the White Sox roster, White Sox fans should absolutely revolt and, storm the front office and just vomit on everybody. Just fingers down the back of your throat and vomit on everything and everybody.
You'll see a photo of Rick Hahn doing that pouty Rick Hahn face, just covered in puke.
Rick Hahn with it, like up doing his penguin impersonation with his umbrella. Trying to ward off vomit.
Old Uncle Jerry's going to be sleeping with his head on his hand and just the vomit's just going to rain on him as he continues to sleep.
He's just going to be like, I didn't know we were having pudding for dinner.
Ew. And then you're going to see Kenny Williams trying to drive away in a golf cart.
Oh my goodness. It's because it is going to be a travesty if that guy's not on the opening day roster.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
How do you explain that to everybody?
You can't.
Hey, the guy that could be the next, greatest player in Major League Baseball, we're just going to let him sit down in the minors again. Even though his slash line was ridiculous.
Yeah, if it's not injury related, there's no excuse.
And I mean, that's got to be so frustrating for him too. Especially when you're watching. I mean, it's one thing if you're like, I can't crack the Dodgers or the Astros lineup because they're so good. And I know I'm going to had some struggles there. But the guy is a five-tool player. You can't tell me you can't use his defense or his base running abilities. And you can't tell me that he's not better than somebody, that's in your lineup right now.
Right.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think I've said my piece.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or the TuneIn app or Google Play. Follow us on social media at ShyFanPat1. At Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com. Please share this podcast with friends that like Chicago sports. That's how we grow the podcast. And thank you guys so much for listening. Until next time, bear down.
Smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go Bears.